Hello and welcome to the Vegan Body Revolution Show. I am your host, Thomas Tadlock from veganbodyrevolution.com, where I show you how to achieve your ultimate dream body on a 100% plant-based diet. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We are speaking with Mr. Matt Frazier, endurance expert extraordinaire. In the previous episode, we just got to know a lot about Matt and why he decided to go vegan and what book particularly inspired him to go vegan, despite what it might have done to his running performance. But what he so fortunately discovered right afterwards was that switching from going, I guess you would call it, eating meat to going vegetarian actually had an improvement on his performance. And in this episode, we're going to continue this discussion and we're going to get into some really cool details and things that you can take away to improve your endurance. So let's bring him back on the line, Mr. Matt Frazier.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
You're welcome, brother. You're welcome. All right. So you just, in the previous episode, you talked to us, you told me a little bit about how you decided to go vegan and an extraordinary book that you read that just completely changed your mindset about the topic. And that's beautiful. So you went ethical right from the very beginning, and then you discovered there's some performance benefits to this.
Yeah. Within 6 weeks or so, I basically went out for a 12-mile run. That was a very standard run for me. And didn't expect too much because I was recovering from an injury at the time. And when I got back from that run, I realized I was back 6 minutes early, which doesn't sound like a whole lot. But, you know, for 12 miles, that means 30 seconds per mile. And at that point, that was the difference in speed that I needed to accomplish my goal, which was to qualify for the Boston Marathon. Wow. So I thought, wow, if I can keep that up for a marathon and if I can train all summer at this new level, then I'm going to make it. And that's exactly what happened. I qualified the next time with a 309 marathon.
Wow. I mean, you must have been stoked about that.
Oh, it was amazing. It was the culmination of 6 or 7 years of really hard work and ups and downs, thinking I was never going to do it, being told I was never going to do it, being actually told once by a physical therapist that my body was not made for running and I just shouldn't be doing this because my shins were having so much trouble. So to actually get that done, it was just this amazingly emotional, powerful thing for me.
Dude, yeah. I mean, what you get to you made breakthroughs on so many different levels. One, from a physical level, you achieved a new height of performance that you've never achieved before, and you did it after kind of living your own spiritual morals.
Yeah, and that was great. And the fact that I had the blog about it and was, that all these people were now following me and that knowing that I was in some way being an example that look, everyone thinks you go vegetarian or vegan and it will make you weak. Here's a little experiment I'm doing on myself, and it turned out to work, the exact opposite of what I had assumed, I actually got faster because of it.
That is so cool. That is awesome. So now you took it to another level. You went so you were vegetarian at the time. So that means what you were you still eating eggs and some dairy?
Yeah, I've never really been a big egg eater. I just haven't really liked eggs, but I was still eating like cheese. Like my kind of splurge meal would still be ordering pizza on a Friday night. And like many vegetarians, I had this idea that I just couldn't give up cheese, that I just liked it too much. And gradually over the course of 2 years, once I went vegetarian, and I think this happens to a lot, I started to become more educated about it and started watching the films, I guess Forks Over Knives was not yet, but Earthlings, that one all about animal cruelty things, Food Inc., those kind of, I started to become more aware that dairy isn't necessarily isn't by any means really a cruelty-free industry, even though, many people have this idea that, well, that's not harming the animal because it's not meat. The animal doesn't have to die for it. So I just gradually got turned off. And over the course of 2 years, ate less and less dairy. Finally, it just took me saying, okay, this is it. This is the day where I stop. And then after that, there were no problems. And it was actually very easy to give up cheese, much easier than I had expected.
Was it a goal of yours to eventually give up cheese? And it's just at the time when you went vegetarian that just you weren't ready to do that?
I didn't really have that goal at the time. At the point, like I said, I was sort of uninformed, and I just thought, like everyone else, or like many other people, that giving up meat was 99% of the work. That the rest wasn't that important, I thought. As I became more educated, though, I just started to not feel as good about eating it. So I kind of limited it naturally and said, well, I'm just going to do it maybe out of the house, not in the house. And I had these little rules. But then I think, I don't know, some comments on my blog or something, someone kind of linked me to some story about the way dairy cows are treated and the way the babies are separated from the mother immediately. And, you know, something about that just struck a chord in me. And it was like, I said, okay, well, then I'm just going to be done with this. And that's all it took. It just took saying, like, making a commitment and saying, this is it. And so, yeah, it wasn't really a goal as much as something that just kind of came up, and I realized that I didn't want to be doing it anymore.
Right on. Right on. You know, my wife had the same experience. My wife has been vegetarian. My wife, she's also known as Dr. G. She is a medical doctor, but she's been vegetarian since she was 12 years old and didn't go vegan until about 6 years ago. And what she kept in her diet was dairy. She was doing dairy and some eggs because for the very same reasons. She was just uninformed. The reason she gave up meat and all animal flesh was because of the cruelty and the torture and the death. But she just didn't know that the same thing was going on in the dairy and the egg industry. She almost considers the dairy to be even worse and even more cruel because these animals are kept alive and are forced to live through this awful misery. So once she learned that, it was, she's like, I am done. I'm never supporting this again. If I had known this earlier, I would already have been vegan sooner.
Yeah.
And I jumped on the boat eventually too for that very same reason. Oh man, well, right on for that. So let me ask you this. So you mentioned several times about being injury free and how the diet helped you do that. So what kind of injuries does a runner like you face when you're training?
Well, for me and a lot of people who kind of just pick up running like I did, shin splints are a big one, and I didn't know that much about what was wrong. I didn't realize that if you were, because I wasn't a runner when I started. I just started doing it, and I just kept running through the pain. I thought, well, this is just part of it. It's soreness. It'll go away. And gradually my shin splints turned into stress fractures at some point.
Whoa.
I forget what actually brought me into the doctor and what made me finally say this is enough. But I think it was just the amount of pain that just didn't go away. And I finally went in there, got an x-ray, and you know, saw this crack in my bone. And just, you know, couldn't believe I had done that to myself in like 3 months of running. So that's a big one. Another really common one that for me, and every once in a while it still crops up, but never has forced me to miss a race or anything like that recently, is iliotibial band syndrome. And that's the inflammation of this IT band, that just very, very common overtraining injury that happens to runners. But I every once in a while I'll still have it, and I'll notice it when I'm in a heavy training period, but it's nothing like it was before. I used to have, you know, very serious problems with that, and haven't had that in good 6 years or so.
So let me just make sure that the audience knows what we're talking about. So shin splints, really quickly. Shin splints. Can you just describe what that is?
You know, I don't even know what the precise thing is. I believe it has to do with kind of tendons and ligaments in your lower leg that are becoming, I think, pulled away from the muscle or the bone. And
what do you feel when you're having shin splints?
Oh, just kind of a generalized pain in your shins as you're running.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was, I think there are some ways to distinguish it from stress fractures. Like one of them happens at the beginning of a run, one happens at the end. And the big one for me was realizing, I think, that stress fractures is a very, very localized pain. Like you can pinpoint exactly where it's really, really hurts if you press it, versus shin splints are kind of just an all over your shins bother you after you run or during your runs. Mm,
okay.
Very common.
And for those of you who are not sure what iliotibial band syndrome is, the iliotibial band or tract it's a band of connective tissue that goes from, you got to imagine this, it's like the lower outside of your butt. It connects from your glutes, your big glute muscles, and it runs down the outside of your thigh all the way down to around your knee area. So what you were feeling, Matt, were you getting some pain through there when you ran, or was it
a dull thing? Yep, like the outside of the knee, one of the telltale signs of it is that when you're walking downstairs the next day or after your exercise, that you have a lot of pain out there versus for some reason going upstairs or flat doesn't hurt it as much, but down does. And it can come on really quickly, and it can basically force you to just stop in the middle of a run because it just feels like you can't move your knee. It just hurts too much. And the good thing about it is just inflammation. It's not generally a really serious thing that you can fix by just taking the proper time off and then correcting whatever it is that was causing it. Because a lot of people, will get injured, and then they'll rest, and then they'll go back to doing whatever they were doing and hope that it won't happen. But I mean, if you go back to doing the same thing, then you're going to get the same results. So, you know, you have to get corrected whatever is causing that.
So you got those addressed, and then your diet changed. You stopped eating the meat, and you switched to being vegetarian or vegan, and those injuries have never come back.
Yeah, after I qualified for Boston, I decided I was kind of ready for – first of all, I mean, that summer of training was fantastic. I put in more hard workouts, 4 really tough running workouts a week or so than I had ever been able to do before, and didn't really know at the time that my diet was to thank for. But now looking back and seeing how the past 4 or 5 years have been, I do believe that was the cause of it. And yeah, after I qualified for Boston, I decided to kind of go after some bigger goals, like running ultra marathons, which meant like a 50K, which is 31 miles, then a 50 miler, and then eventually I wanted to do a 100 miler. And those were things that prior to that point to me had seemed, you know, impossible for many reasons. First of all, kind of the fatigue, just the idea that you couldn't run that long. But more than that, it was kind of I just assumed my body would break down because I knew how hard it was to train for a marathon. And by the end of almost every training cycle, as I got to be 3 or 4 weeks away from the race, something inevitably, you know, cropped up. Some injury was happening. So I just thought ultramarathons aren't in the cards for me. Like I said, a physical therapist told me that I'm probably not really built to be a runner because my legs were getting injured too much. But, you know, after I did that, after I qualified for Boston and just was injury-free for this entire summer, I thought, you know, maybe this can work. I didn't know if it was the diet or what, but I said, I'm going to go after a 50 miler. And I did it. I was successful. I ran another one just 3 months later. And then eventually got up to the 100 as we mentioned in the last episode. And yeah. And I think so much of that has been the ability to just keep running, keep putting in the miles without having to take 2 and 3 months off because of an injury. So, yeah, I think a ton of that has to do with the diet. And that just seems to be what so many people report when they go vegan.
So how do you get from barely being able to run 26 miles to busting out 100 miles?
Right. Well, you know what? What might be surprising is it's not that different. Your physical conditioning doesn't have to be that different. So much of it is mindset, and basically just. I mean, I've. In that process, in training for some 50 milers first and eventually getting up to this 100, there were a lot of times when I would go out for what was supposed to be, say, a 30-mile run, like really long weekend run or a race, and I'd go out too fast. I'd go out kind of feeling like I was running a marathon and go out with that same intensity. And finally, I kind of learned. It took me a long time to learn, but finally I learned you just can't go out this fast. You have to kind of reel it in a little bit. And understand. So like when I was doing this 100 miler, I constantly reminded myself, I said, okay, it's 6 a.m. right now. We just started running an hour ago. There's a very good chance that at 6 a.m. tomorrow, I'm still going to be running. So I have to keep that in mind. this isn't going to be over in 4 hours if you push really hard like it is with a marathon. You absolutely have to go slow or this will turn into the most miserable, you know, 18, 20, 24 hours of your life. So you know, so much of it is mindset. But of course, there is the training. I mean, you kind of have to get used to. And what I did was started logging a lot of miles, very much like that, like just much, you know, more miles, but at a lower intensity. So you know, you get to the point where a 6 or 8 or 10 mile run really feels like nothing. You can go do it at this kind of relaxed pace and get back and feel like more energized when you come home than when you left. And that, you know, that's something that I didn't ever have as a marathoner. You know, 10 miles was always a pretty tough run. But, you know, just kind of by repetition and eating really well, eating really clean diet and doing it enough times, I mean, I think your body does learn. Like with every step you take, I think your body learns how it runs most efficiently. Your brain learns kind of, you know, what muscles to move so that you're expending the least amount of effort with each step and doing it in a way that's not going to hurt you. And I think your brain is a lot better at that than we tend to give it credit for. And I really think just, you know, putting in the miles, I think you really do get better, get more efficient with every step. So
let's start with a guy like me who, I think 5 miles is the most I've ever run at a time.
Uh-huh. That's not bad. I mean,
oh, thank you.
some people, really, I couldn't run 2 miles when I started marathon
training. I think I've done that once. Now, what are the steps to take me from that 5 miles eventually to 100 miles. How do you do that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think people will probably laugh and think that's just a crazy thing to even imagine.
Yes.
But it's not, I mean, I don't know. It, for someone who can run 5 miles, for them to run a marathon, to me, is not that far apart. Yes, they have to train for 6 months and put in the work, but it's not, and maybe more than 6 months, depending on what exactly your condition is and all this. But I don't know. If you can go 5 miles, there's not really a huge fundamental difference between, you know, between that and being able to just extend it longer. And as I mentioned in the last episode that we did, the very first key is to slow down. So, you know, how long would it take you to run that 40 miles? I mean, I'm sorry, that five miles? I was thinking 40 minutes. I was just in my head. But how long would it take you to run that 5 miles?
God, I don't even remember. Let's see. How long did I run 5 miles? It's like, I think it took me about 45 or 50 minutes. Does that sound right?
Okay, yeah.
Is that embarrassingly slow?
No, that's totally reasonable. I mean, you know, that'd be a 9 or 10 minute mile. So if you were to go out and run a 12 minute mile instead, or a 13 minute mile, and I mean, yeah, that's very slow, and it'll feel at times like you're just barely not walking, like you're just barely going faster than that.
Uh-huh.
But if you were to do that and kind of just relax, not you know, maybe if you're into listening to music or podcasts or whatever, do that if you can do it safely while you're running or whatever, meditating, whatever it is that you can enjoy. And when you're going at a much slower pace, your brain is kind of more freed up. You don't go into this fight or flight survival mode that you do when, you know, very naturally, if you start sprinting, your brain starts focusing on exactly that. You're sprinting. You can't think about anything else. You couldn't possibly meditate during a sprint.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm just thinking about how bad my legs hurt. You're absolutely
yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. So when you slow down, you know, the pace significantly, all of a sudden, you might be able to go 8 or 10 miles without getting to that point where you absolutely have to stop. Now, maybe you wouldn't notice that the first day, but you might. But if you kept doing that for a few days and maybe a few weeks, you would find that you could very naturally, you know, you had that ability in you to go further than 5 miles. It's just that you hadn't really gone slow enough to let it happen.
So the first key is go easy. Is make it feel easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, people are embarrassed to be running a 12 or 13 minute mile, but like, you know, my 100 mile run, my target pace for the first half of that race was 13 minute miles. That's what I figured. And then I figured that I would slow down naturally in the second half, as you almost always do in a race of that distance, to about a 15 minute mile, which, you know, it seems like to many people like, wow, you know, I could just walk and do that. It's not quite that easy because on these 100-mile races, they're generally on some pretty tough trails. And in mine, there were some pretty serious mud conditions that made things, you know, there were some miles that took me half an hour to get them done just because it was so muddy and so hilly. But I mean, the point is that you're still doing, I mean, you can still be doing serious exercise, serious athletics at a really slow pace. It's not something to be ashamed of or embarrassed about. And I think in our culture, we kind of have this idea that you have to go fast. You have to, you know, you have to be completely exhausted when you get home from your workout or from your run.
Yeah, sure.
And that's not the case at all. And you can't have that mindset as an ultra runner or you will break down. Like if I came home 7 days a week exhausted from my workout, I wouldn't last 3 weeks before I started having injury issues.
That I think that's a brilliant, awesome tip right there. I know that'll help me because I was doing completely the opposite. Because I think I was bringing in the type of attitude that I would have in the gym where
right.
I go to the gym for muscle building, you know, I'm trying to just completely tear up as much muscle fiber as possible and just kill myself doing it. And when I was doing my running at the time, I remember hating every minute of that run where in my mind, I had to talk myself through the incredible pain that I was feeling every step that I was running. I'm sitting there calling myself, come on, you pussy, you've done harder
right.
than this. You know, it's just, right. you know, you graduated college, you can do, you know, like stuff going through my head. It was torture, you know, and I was just counting the seconds to when it was finally over. But what you're saying is don't even get that. Don't even let yourself get to that point. Make it
so it's an
easy, gentle experience.
Yes. If your goal is to kind of become an endurance athlete, if it's something else, like if you're a bodybuilder and you're doing your run for a fat burning workout and you're doing it a couple times a week for that reason, you know, maybe it is best to go at that all out intensity as long as you can do it in a way that's sustainable, that's not going to break you down and injure you.
Yeah. But you're never going to run 100 miles doing that.
No, I mean, you're not going to run 10 miles doing that.
So, all right. So what I'm hearing here is drop your intensity to the point where it's gentle, it's easy, it's enjoyable, but extend your mileage out as long as you can.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say as long as you can. Like, you don't want to go out there and say, I'm going to go until I, you know, literally collapse. But, but, you know, realize that all of a sudden, because you've slowed down, your limit has extended a little bit. You might be able to go 6 miles when previously you've only gone five. So go at an easier intensity, let yourself go a little bit longer. Don't be afraid that you're running more. But I mean, be careful. You don't want to all of a sudden, if all you've done is say three mile runs per week, so 9 miles per week, and you slow down, you don't all of a sudden want to put in 25 miles each week. I mean, that you need to gradually let your body get there and get used to it. But yeah, you can. I mean, extending from 10 to 25 miles a week wouldn't be something that had to take more than a few months or so if you were slowing down and it was truly, you know, and you weren't feeling entirely broken down when you got back from a run.
So when you for each consecutive run that you do, are you adding a little bit more?
I've done that at certain times when I get out of running for whatever reason and want to get back into it. What I often do is I'll start with, say, I'm going to run every day or 6 days a week or what, I mean, whatever. I think having a good day off is smart. So let's say 6 days a week, and I'll do 20 minutes, and then I'll say, okay, so in the next week, I'm going to extend that to 25 minutes. And the next week, I'll get up to 30 minutes. So it's not every run you're going further than the previous one, but I would say every week or 2 weeks, you can kind of increase your mileage. The general rule that is very often quoted is you don't want to increase your mileage by more than 10% per week, which is a good rule of thumb. I mean, it has some problems, and it's not a perfect rule by any means, but it's kind of a good thing to keep in mind when you are increasing mileage.
Okay, so you're fixing the time. So you said first week go 20 minutes. Now, are you trying to go as long as you can or as far as you can within that 20 minutes, or are you just trying to keep it nice and gentle and however far you go is what it is?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. For the most part, I train actually based on mileage, and I'll say I'm going to go run 3 miles today or 7 miles today or whatever. That's kind of something that I've done when I've been out of running and just want to get back into it and want to get myself to do it. Like, I found that's the way that works well for me, is just to forget about mileage and just go enjoy myself for 20 minutes and just feel good. So I'm not trying to push it hard at all. I'm just saying if I actually keep moving for 20 minutes, then I have met my goal today. Doesn't matter how fast, but just kind of to get your mind into the habit of running again, or for the first time. I would say that is something good for the first time.
All right. Now, so going from 5 miles to 10 to 15 and then eventually 26, that would be phase one. Now, is it the same exact strategy to go from 26 miles to 50?
I don't, it's, I would say,
how did you do it?
I did it by putting in more miles. I mean, once I got to the point when a marathon became comfortable and I got used to the idea of running marathons at a slow pace, like when I was training for that qualifying for Boston, to me, a marathon meant you go as hard as you can so that when you're done 26 miles, you collapse because you left it all on the course, basically. Mm-hmm. It was really a mindset shift. And it's kind of that same mindset shift that we just talked about. I mean, it's a matter of saying, okay, now I'm going to have to do this for 50 miles. So I need to slow down significantly. And I mean, there are some other differences too, because marathons tend to be on roads and ultras tend to be on trails. So you need to learn how to run on trails. But what that brings with it is, because you have a lot steeper hills on trails, it turns out that the strategy to be fastest for most people, except for the very, very top highest level runners, is to walk the steep hills. Just because when yes, you can run up a steep hill and be slightly faster than someone who's walking up it, but you expend so much more energy. So, the mindset shifts to kind of being one of expending and saving energy and doing everything you can, really getting your form. So it's like kind of locking it in and finding a good form so that you are very efficient. Getting out of that mindset, like in a marathon, people generally will run through the water stations or walk very quickly through them, drink water, spill it on themselves, drink Gatorade, whatever. Ultras are different. You stop at an aid station for 2 or 3 minutes. Sometimes people stop for 10 minutes. Maybe some people might even take a nap at an aid station. I mean, it's a different mindset. It becomes more about, I'm going to be out here for a whole day and I need to finish. So what's going to let me do that? So, it definitely is a shift. And again, away from that go, go, go mentality towards you know, something that's more like an adventure, more like a hike, but still with its fair share of running.
So you don't have to be in movement every second that you're in a 50-mile race.
No,
and what you just said, you can be. Some people are even taking naps at those stations. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Jurek, I mentioned him. You know, one of the best ultra runners of all time, who was a vegan. He won the Badwater Ultra Marathon, which is 135 miles through Death Valley, where it gets to be like 120 degrees. He won that, and I think in his book, he has a book called Eat and Run that came out last year. Great book, by the way, if you want to like start to learn about ultra running and just kind of what goes through an ultra runner's mind, and have some pretty good vegan recipes in there too. He talks about, I think he took a big nap in the middle of this Badwater. He went out way too fast, crashed somewhere around mile 70 or something, and thought he might not finish the race, but took some sort of nap. I don't know if it was an hour or what, and then woke up and came back and won the race. So,
jeez.
I mean, yeah, so it's not, it's different. It's not like napping is being lazy or wimping out of the race. I mean, it can become part of your strategy. So I didn't take it to that extreme, but in my 100 miler, which of course is nowhere near the level of, you know, I'm not, these people winning these things are averaging maybe 8 or 9 minute miles. And I was
wow,
something more than 15 minutes for my miles. But anyway, I was intentionally walking for 5 minutes after every 25 minutes of running for the first half of the race. That was part of my strategy because I knew that would prevent me from getting into the zone of going too fast, where I was just kind of, you know, putting in too many fast miles that I couldn't tell were hurting me, but that come mile 50 would all catch up to me and I'd just be walking for the rest of the race. I did not want that to happen. So, you know, I walked for 5 minutes after every 25, and that's a totally reasonable strategy. I mean, I realized to someone who's only thought about sprinting or weightlifting or even 5Ks, that seems ridiculous that you would intentionally walk in your race. But it's a very different mindset.
You know, I used to have a hybrid SUV, and I remember the difference between that. And before that, I had a sports sedan, and I used to drive my sports sedan. I used to love flooring it because I used to love to feel the power behind me and just getting from A to Z and accelerating. But I also could see how much gas I was wasting when I was doing it because I had one of those little meters that told me how many miles per gallon I was wasting when I was doing that. And then when I switched to my hybrid, my mindset completely changed. My goal was to get from point A to Z conserving as much gas as humanly possible. It used to be a game for me to see, all right, how long can I just glide till I get to the stoplight, or how slowly can I accelerate without getting the MPG meter going up too high? And it sounds like this is the mindset. This is how you got to shift when you're running.
That is the perfect metaphor for it. I mean, really, like there are so many parallels. The same, like that's why you walk hills in an ultra if you're not at the very top competitive level, because you basically don't want that MPG number to go too low. You don't want the RPMs too high. You don't want to be you don't want to put your intensity up too high where you shift into this any sort of sugar burning state where your body's like, you know, really working. You don't want to be ever like breathing hard in an ultra. If you are, then you're doing something wrong at the beginning, because you're asking for disaster later on if you do that. So yeah, it absolutely is. You shift from this, how fast can I do this? How powerfully can I do this? To, you know, how can I conserve the most energy while doing this? And one thing I didn't hit on yet, that is another really great key for people who are starting out as running or at running, is, you know, they talk about form a lot, and form is something that's debated among runners. People wonder, like, should you really pay attention to running form, or should you just do what comes naturally? Because we've all been running, hopefully, for our whole lives, or at least know how to run since we were kids. So should we think about form? And I don't like to think about it too much, but there is one trick that really makes everything come together in an amazing way. And that is if you speed up the amount of steps you take per minute. So most people naturally are probably taking 150, 160 steps per minute when they run, which is, you know, slightly less. It's probably, I don't know, what would that be? Two steps per second, 2.5 steps per second.
Yeah.
If you can increase that to 3 steps per second, 180 steps per minute, it just has this way of automatically making everything else or so much else of your form fall into place. And the reason is because to get that leg turnover, I mean, that fast of a turnover, you have to take necessarily shorter steps. And that prevents you. What causes so many running injuries is when people take these really long strides, come crashing down on their heel with their foot way out in front of their body, as modern running shoes allow us to do because there's so much cushioning in the heel So, you know, by putting that much cushioning in there, we're kind of skipping this feedback mechanism. I mean, if you were to go barefoot and go out for a run and run the way most people do, you know, where you're landing on your heel, taking these long, slow strides, it would be a tremendous amount of pain with every step on your heel, because your heel just isn't meant to handle that kind of impact. So by quickening your steps like this, you are forcing these steps to be lower. Your weight stays over your feet rather than letting your feet go out. You shift to more of a midfoot strike. So many good things happen as a result of this. And if you've never done it before, I mean, it'll feel weird the first 2 weeks while your body's getting used to it, because it's going to take different muscles than in a different longer stride, the one that you're probably used to. But in the long term, so many benefits come from increasing your turnover rate like this. And it turns out the reason people figured this out was they started studying, you know, how fast are the people winning marathons, how fast are they turning their legs over? And it turned out that, you know, almost all of them were in a very small window around 180 steps per minute. So that's a huge key that really kind of frees you from having to think about too much else with running form. And you can get that so it feels comfortable. And then, you know, from there, figuring that out for me as a marathoner was the beginning of a long period of improvement without too many injuries.
That is fascinating. Because, you know, if I were to compare this to animals in nature, you know, everybody says you run like a gazelle, and you look at gazelles run, they take these massive strides, you know,
yeah,
they're airborne for like 10 seconds and then they come down and they do it again. So I've always thought, wow, okay, well, the longer you are in the air, the longer and faster you're going to be able to go. But what you're saying is don't run like a gazelle, run like a hamster. Run like you've got little itty bitty.
Yeah, I'm pretty much.
And you take these short little shuffle strides.
Yeah, if you're going long distances. I mean, gazelles are sprinters, and people who win, like Usain Bolt, the reason he's so great is because he can maintain a high leg turnover, but at the same time take such long strides and still, you know, without slowing down that turnover. So if you multiply that together, your stride length times the number of strides you can do, that tells you how far you'll go in a certain amount of time. And that's what makes a great sprinter, someone who can turn the legs over quickly and have very long strides. And as you become an ultra runner, it just you stop thinking about stride length, really. I mean, you just want to take quick strides. And assume if you're doing that, then you will be able to keep going. And I think, you know, like I said, Scott Jurek, people who are naturally tall will have a longer stride. And that can be an advantage if, you know, at the highest levels, I'm sure.
All right, let's summarize what you would consider the top three or five training tips for getting from 0 to 100 miles in a run. And you mentioned a couple. One is incrementally adding more mileage to your training over the course of many months.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is is increase the number of strides, but be okay with shortening your strides.
Yep, you have to be. I mean, pretty much, if you want to do them. And then I would add to that first one, and the way to incrementally increase your mileage is to slow down from what you are, if you're going at anything that's at all an intense pace. I mean, you don't want to be exhausted at the end of your run. So slow down 10 or 20% from what maybe you've done before if you've never gotten into distance running. We mentioned, in the past episode, setting a big goal. I mean, I realize that's not really a training tip, but
I think it's valid, sure.
But yeah, to me, having that in the background, having, you know, knowing your reason for doing this, that's essential, isn't it, really?
Wonderful. And any tips on like footwear or training gear you should have when you're doing this?
Yeah, I mean, footwear is somewhat involved. The rest of the gear is not that important. I mean, you want to try to get stuff that's not cotton so that it will, you know, wick away moisture. Even that's debatable, whether wicking away moisture is a good thing or a bad thing. And some people will say that prevents your body from cooling itself correctly because the moisture is being taken away from your skin where it would evaporate and cool you. But anyway, the point is, you know, get something that's not going to chafe, because when you're going 13 or 26 miles, if you have cotton socks on, you're going to get blisters. If you're wearing regular gym shorts, you might have a problem. You know, things will just add up over that amount of steps, that amount of movements. So get stuff that is, you know, I don't know, I guess slick. I don't know what the word is, but something that is not going to cause blisters. But then as far as footwear goes, I mean, I'm a fan. I mentioned this idea about how modern shoes, because they're built up in the heel and have all this cushioning, they kind of bypass this built-in feedback mechanism. Like if something hurts, you shouldn't be running that way. So, you know, the minimalist movement has really taken off recently, getting even barefoot running. I'm a big fan of having shoes that are built without too much fancy stuff going into them, but still have some cushioning. So I like having a little bit of cushioning in there. There's still some really light shoes that don't have too much structure to them. You know, they still allow you to get some of these benefits of the barefoot idea. Like you, without too much stability in the shoe, your muscles have to work more. Your feet have to develop their muscles. So I don't know. I'm a big fan of
shoes. What shoes do you like to train with?
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of shoes from the company called Brooks. They make a lot of running shoes. And a good thing about Brooks is that all their shoes are vegan friendly. All their running shoes, anyway. Their walking shoes are not. But that's one thing to be concerned about if you are an ethical vegan, and that's that the glue used in a lot of shoes is very often, you know, based on from animals. I don't know if it's from the bones or what, but it's like leather is not that big a deal with shoes now, or it's not commonly used in running shoes, I should say, just because it's not really a great material for it. It's heavier than these synthetic materials, so that's not the big issue. It's this glue, and it's hard to find out. A lot of running companies don't make it public what they're using, and I think they probably switch. They probably don't even know what it's going to be, depending on what factory it comes from or whatever. But I like Brooks because you know that a lot of their shoes are vegan, and so they make some good minimalist shoes. They have a line called the Pure Project, and those are some shoes that are designed to be more just kind of allow your foot to still do some of the work, but to have this cushioning built in. And there's a new company called shoes called Hoka One Ones. That's Hoka and then 1-1. They make shoes that are really built for ultra running, and they're built to absorb impacts and make it so that if after you've been running 50 miles, you know, the amount of impacts that your feet have felt are not that large, and your feet aren't like a limiting factor, because that really does become a limiting factor, is how bad your feet can hurt after a race of that distance. I realized, you know, having a big built-up shoe that cushions your foot is sort of the opposite of what I just said about this minimalist movement. So I don't train in those shoes all the time, but I think for racing now and then, for your longest runs, it can the advantage of having zero foot pain essentially outweighs some of the disadvantages of having a more built-up shoe.
Okay, so when you're training in your shorter training sessions, you won't use a shoe like that. But it's almost like when a swimmer puts on that shark suit during race day to give them that last little bit of advantage. But they don't train in those shark suits. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like
in
the Olympics. Exactly. Yep. That's another
training in and out like that. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Very cool. But buddy, this has been great. I want to thank you so much for your generosity and what you've been able to share to help us improve our endurance in running. What I want to do is we're going to wrap up this episode, and in the next one, let's go into what it takes. What do you have to eat in order to be an ultra running Uber stud like yourself, and to reduce inflammation, improve your performance, and get all those endurance benefits. Does that sound cool?
All right, you got it. Sounds great.
All right, wonderful. Well, I want to thank you folks for tuning in to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. If you have enjoyed it, please do us a huge favor. Go to iTunes. Give us a nice review, because the more reviews you write for us, and if you feel that we deserve 5 stars, please give us 5 stars. The higher we rank up and the more eyeballs get our message of being vegans and being able to achieve your ultimate dream body on a 100% plant-based diet. Also, make sure that you download your very own copy of the free muscle building guide, the Vegan Muscle Building Guide. Go to veganmusclebook.com. And also, make sure that you join the conversation that's already happening at facebook.com/veganbodyrevolution. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. This is Thomas Tadlock, your host of the Vegan Body Revolution Show, and we will catch you on the next podcast.